Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Special guest today, founding editor of Cavs the Blog, Mr. John Krolik. How's it going?
It's going well, Zach. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm trying to figure out your Cleveland Cavaliers. I was asked about them on the podcast yesterday. Basically, the question was, why are Cavs? And I really don't know. I don't know what the problem is. I thought they were going to be good-ish this year, and instead they've been not good-ish.
No, not good-ish at all. And if there was one problem with the Cavaliers, that would be thrilling. There are many of them.
What's the biggest problem?
There are a lot of them, but I would say it's culture. Moving the ball on offense and taking pride defensively. I don't think either of those things are happening. And I think that the real issue is that Kyrie is tuning out Mike Brown, and I think that's trickling down to the rest of the team. And I think it's leading to Mike Brown not being effective, Kyrie not being as effective, and just a mutually toxic relationship right at the top between your best player and your coach. And I think that's trickling down to the rest of the team. And then also, I just think their front line is terribly constructed. Anderson Varejão and Tristan Thompson. That's a terrible front line, particularly in offense.
It's not.
You can't run that out every night and expect good things to happen.
Yeah, that's not the most skilled front line.
No, it's not the most skilled front line. And then having a number one overall pick be literally the worst rotation player in basketball sets your plans back a long, long ways. Even though, like, not a lot of rookies are really contributing this year, that's abnormal in and of itself. It's a number one overall pick, and he's incredibly bad.
I do want to start with the number one. I feel bad for Anthony Bennett, because coming out of college, I didn't think he was going to be an all-star or anything, but I thought he'd be good. And he still has plenty of time to be good. I think his biggest problems are conditioning and having time to, like, actually develop his skill set and really figure out how to hone that in the NBA game, which I think he'll do to a certain extent. But he's truly awful right now. I mean
of the qualified players, he's last in PER. And, like, it's not close. He's got a 2.66 PER. The second worst guy has a 5.23 PER.
Has
4 points of PER on him.
A PER should never resemble a mediocre GPA.
Yes, Kendrick Perkins has doubled him in PER.
Wow. Oh, yeah. that's not good.
And that's not even, like, the worst. Like, just watching him, he just doesn't look like an NBA player. He sort of picks and pops and shoots, and he'll shoot threes and then miss them often. And then it's like, well, you know, go to the hole, and then he'll go in there, and he's had no lift or spring in there. It's not even like an Anthony Randolph situation where he's playing badly overall, like playing very badly overall. But, like, he'll make two or three crazy plays, like a step-back jumper, like some impossible block, or like a huge dunk where it's like, dude, if this guy gets it together, like, he could be
right.
A star.
Right.
But with Anthony Bennett, it's like, who does this fat man have pictures of? Like, it's just like, you don't know. I mean, like, if we didn't know he was the number one overall pick, like, we would not know that this guy is supposed to be a professional basketball player.
Right. I mean, this is a horribly small sample size and not a great thing to go off of, but
we're getting to 36 games.
No. What I'm about to say is. This is a horrible sample size, but if you had shown me film of Anthony Bennett's, you know, last three games, and then showed me what I saw out of Manny Harris for the Lakers last night, I would have thought, well, Manny Harris is 100 times better than Anthony Bennett.
Everyone's better than Anthony Bennett. He's last in PER. He's last by, like, a lot.
Is it simply he's just not in shape?
That's part of it, and it's all just sort of spiraled and snowballed onto itself. He came in not in shape. And remember, nobody had him as, like, the top overall pick.
No.
Coming into the draft. I mean, that was a shocking pick. So it's not like, oh my God, what happened? And this is a very weak draft. Really, they're out of the rookies. I mean, I'll take a quick look here. The sort of rotation rookies this year, there are like five of them. You've got Hardaway, Oladipo, Giannis, who it looks like should have been the number one overall pick.
Right.
Which is incredible. Giannis is like Anthony Randolph, who like knows what makes teams win basketball games.
Right. It's like,
which I don't think people understand how high of a compliment that is.
It's like if Anthony Randolph actually had a basketball IQ. It wouldn't even have to be a high one.
He I don't even want to like use the word basketball IQ, but like understood like why teams win basketball games. Like if you miss shots, the other team gets it.
Right.
And then your team doesn't have the ball anymore and you can't score, and then they can score, and then you will lose the game.
Right.
Because the team that scores more loses. It scores more wins. Like, that is something Giannis gets that Anthony Randolph never really grasped.
I'm looking at the top 10 picks of the draft, and I mean, it's not good, but even if they had gone with Nerlens Noel, Noel would have contributed more this season so far than Bennett, because he would just be contributing hope of like, oh, when we get this guy back, yeah, here's a shot block.
Oh, yeah, like, I think I've said before, his stock has gone up so much this year just by doing nothing.
Right.
Because all the other rookies, other than Oladipo, looks like a rotation shooting guard who's going to eventually get better.
Yeah, I like Ben McLemore, and I like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as like future rotation guys for sure.
Yeah, I mean McLemore's shown flashes.
Yeah,
his PR is under 10 right now.
Yeah,
but again, that's the thing that you got to communicate about Anthony Bennett. There haven't even been, I mean, we know how bad the numbers are, but watching, there really haven't even been the flashes.
Right, he's had hot flashes.
There have been no flashes.
He's shooting 28%.
Oh yeah, no, it's all like he's worse than the numbers look. Like,
yeah,
there's nothing on it where it's like, oh, but he's doing like little things and like impacting games, and like you can see the glimmer. Like there's none of it. He just came in horribly out of shape and hasn't fixed that. And I don't know, and his confidence is down spiraled. But no, I think that. And the team as a whole, just the roster, it's just not a very good roster. There are not a lot of starting quality NBA players on it. And Tristan Thompson's like considered, you see by the team and like by the fans, is like one of like the young core guys. But then I like to play the Tristan Thompson challenge, which is like, name a team that would want Tristan Thompson as their starting forward. Like, go through them, like one by one.
Like, the funny thing to me is there's still quite a few Cavs fans that I follow on Twitter who will, like, Tristan will have a double-double. It's like, I don't know, his eighth double-double in his last 12 games or something like that. And they'll be like, did we still make the wrong pick? And I'm like, well, yeah, Jonas Valanciunas is a lot better.
Yeah, no, it's like, the thing is he's, like, sort of exceeded expectations, certainly offensively, because he's, like, a solid double-double guy, and he switched his shooting hands and brought his free throws up to, like, 70%, and he's competent offensively, so it's like, something's going right here, but it's like, who would want him as their starting power forward?
Right.
With Charlotte for the rest of the season, if there are no salary cap or age considerations, start him over Josh McRoberts?
I would hope so, but I can't give you a definitive answer.
You can't, that's not a slam dunk yes, right? And that's Josh McRoberts.
Right. To be fair, he did have a monster dunk on Andrew Bogut last night.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and McRoberts can at least stretch the floor.
Right.
And that's the other thing. I mean, Barajao actually does have a bit of a mid-range shot this season. It's just slow, but if he can get it off, he's actually fairly good at knocking it down. But he's not a guy that's better away from the basket. So when you have two guys who are, neither of whom are really comfortable at all from away from the basket in today's NBA, that's a tough sell.
Yeah. It really is.
They don't have a lot of offense in their starting front court. And Dang is nice, but it's not like a throw-the-ball duel. But mainly Kyrie has sort of gone back this year. His efficiency numbers are way down. He's not playing like he did last year to get players more involved. It feels like the offense is more cramped. It is a worse offense. There's less flow in it. And Kyrie is sort of compounding the problem by trying to do everything himself. His true shooting is down to 524 from 55.3. So actually, I thought he was more efficient than that last year. I was wrong. But, you know, it's now a fairly unimpressive true shooting, and all that's happening as he's being named a starter to the All-Star team. So I think there's a disconnect between Kyrie and the rest of the team. I think it's becoming a problem.
Well, and I
mean, your best player is not setting the tone.
The Luol Deng trade was supposed to kind of reset them, right, and like push them forward, and they've just gotten worse.
I think the idea was that it was a culture trade, that
right.
guys were going to be around somebody who'd been around. You know, first of all, he's a good player.
Yeah.
But he's the kind of guy who works very hard and takes pride in defense. And is the kind of guy on Mike Brown. Because I think what they want to do in the short term is create a Chicago-like atmosphere. Everyone plays defense. Everyone buys in. And then our point guard is just going to do everything on offense. And they're just not getting that. The team doesn't play hard. They're completely out of sync with one another. They don't trust each other. They don't trust. Their shirt doesn't look like they're looking to the couch. And there have been a lot of conflicting reports. I mean, sort of, they've been playing the game for the last 2 weeks, where the national media comes out with something. Things are going horribly in the Cavs locker room. And then the Cleveland media comes back like, things aren't going that badly in the Cavs locker room. But just sort of looking at it and using sort of basic speculation, it sure doesn't look like everyone's in love with Mike Brown.
Right.
It sure doesn't look like a perfect situation right now. And, I mean, I really liked the Mike Brown hiring, and I was glad to see Byron Scott go because they didn't play defense. But now this offense, it really, really is ugly. I think the level of sophistication in NBA offenses has gone up since the last time Mike Brown coached the Cavs.
Yes.
And I think there's very little you can do with what he has right now. But the offense is just bad. It's a bad offense.
What's the difference between
not buying in defense?
What's the difference between this year's offense and last year's offense, just in terms of, like, is there less motion? Is there less pick and roll? What is there anything you can point to and say, well, they're just not doing this anymore, other than scoring?
I would say there is a bit less spacing. There is less pick and roll. It's hard to say. I mean, there's just less passing. There's less moving of the ball. There's less cutting. It's just sort of five different guys with five different ideas of what's going to happen on a given play.
Yeah.
Guys are afraid the ball isn't going to come back to them. And it's starting with Kyrie. He's really playing with some blinders on. And he's gotten better. He's had a really rough start, but he's coming back a little bit. But... and him and Waiters don't mesh, which is why Waiters is a six man now, and which is what he played at Syracuse and what I always have thought he was going to be. And he's a good six man.
Yeah. He has the right mentality for it. He has a skill set for it.
Yeah. I mean, if he can start finishing, he's a near 40% 3-point shooter. He's not quite at 40%, I don't think. I think he's like in the high 30s, and he's fast, especially. He can't finish the basket, his biggest problem right now. But it's one of the things where if he can, and some guys get it and some guys don't, it's such a huge deal in the NBA. It's what, you know, separates the Sebastian Telfairs of the world from the good point guards. And I think a lot of people don't get that, how important it is for guards to not just get to the basket or be fast, but make it the shot when you get there. And he has such a quick first step, but he has a tough time finishing. And so, sometimes guys get that, and sometimes they don't. But hopefully with Deion, he gets that. But past those guys, Kyrie and Deion, there are not a lot of guys who you'd be thrilled to have on the roster. And that's a real problem. Deion's obviously very nice.
Earl Clark is not somebody you want.
No.
Zeller's just been not... I don't know if they've... just not developed him, if he's just not good enough to develop, but...
Yeah, he's a 15-minute night big man. He can run the floor, he's tall, and he'll make some shots. But he's certainly not a guy... And I think the hope was that he was a pretty good shooter coming out of college.
Yeah.
I think the hope was that he would open up the floor a little bit for Varejao and Thompson, because they're players who are at the basket. But I just don't think he's good enough to play enough minutes to really be on that front line all the time.
I mean, even Jarrett Jack hasn't been that good. I think
Jarrett Jack's an awful.
He shot threes well, I guess. He's like 38. I think he's like 38% on the year in threes. The only guy that I've really looked to who's bolstered them when he's on the floor is C.J. Miles. Like, C.J. Miles is a guy you would want in your rotation no matter who you are, I think.
I think so. He is hot and cold.
Yeah.
Very nice for, like, C.J.'s comment right now. Yeah, but he's a rotation guy because he can shoot the three at the NBA level. And he's a solid athlete and a solid defender. But again, for a good team, I don't think he's necessarily anything more than 15 to 20 minutes.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that. It's so all right. So is Chris Grant's got to go, or he's so good at trades that he has to stick around? That's the weird thing.
I think Chris Grant's a dead man walking, and he knows it. Yeah. I mean, Dan Gilbert, when they won the lottery, said we're not coming back to the lottery. Looks like they're going back to the lottery. They signed Mike Brown to a 5-year deal. They're still paying Byron Scott. Someone has to go. You can't trade Kyrie, you know.
Right.
Something has to happen. So I think Chris Grant is not going to be there, which is a bummer because he does do good work with trades. But a lot of his picks have been bad. And I don't have inside info very much, but I have the little morsel that he was the one guy in the Cavs room that did not want Anthony Bennett.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, but he's going to have to take the heat for the draft record.
Right.
Even taking out Anthony Bennett, the Tristan pick was horrible. The Waiters pick is defensible because Harrison Barnes hasn't really built on the last year's playoffs this season. But he's had a lot of high draft picks, and it's just not turning into a team. I mean, at some point, we're coming up on, this is what, year four after post-LeBron? Yes, this is the fourth year after LeBron. After LeBron, I always thought it would be a 5-year plan, but coming in, assuming the season plays out and they miss the playoffs, and even if they don't, making the playoffs barely in the East this year. I mean, and let's be clear about what missing the playoffs in the East means this year. It means you're really bad.
I mean, it means you're nowhere close to turning things around and saying we're not coming back to the lottery.
Yeah, and by the Hollinger rankings, they're 26. And that's the kind of thing about the East. It's like, oh, well, we're only like 3 or 4 games out of the playoffs, guys. Like, we think it's good. Hollinger rankings have them as the 28th team in the league.
Right.
Only Philadelphia and Milwaukee have been worse by the Hollinger rankings.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very, like, you know, the 3 games out of the playoff thing, sure, but they're very, very bad. And, you know, we always knew it wasn't going to be an instant rebuild after LeBron, but going into year 4, there's not a lot of bright, it's not a bright outlook. I think that they're going to try and sign Kyrie to a max extension this summer. I can't speak for Kyrie, but there have been a lot of people wavering. I think he's wavering about whether he wants to stay long term or not, but I know nothing of him or what his camp is thinking, but would you want to commit to this organization long term? Right now?
Not the way they're constructed, no.
No, I wouldn't. So they're going to want to do that, and so one of the things they might do is a new GM. But, yeah, I think at some point, if you're a GM, you had 4 years, and you've never come close to sniffing, and you've fielded 4 horrible basketball teams.
Yeah, I think the first two years, I don't think anybody faulty for
yeah,
it. The third year,
certainly there's nothing you can do.
Right. The third year, you want to see some glimmer of hope. The fourth year, you want to see progress.
You want to see real progress.
Yeah.
And there's been nothing.
And then I wonder if that gets into the problem that they, supposedly had with LeBron when he was in town. Of, all right, we need to make Kyrie happy. Well, let's let him get a guy into the front office. Let's let him, his agent get a guy into the front office. Let's start catering towards him, which I believe they kind of, didn't Dan Gilbert kind of say, we're not going to do that anymore because of how much it seemingly just set them up for failure in a way?
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about comparing the LeBron era to this era, I don't care whose cousin was able to sit in the owner's suite or whatever. they were a championship contender when LeBron's boys were hanging around, and now they're horrible.
Right.
So I don't really. I think the main problem is always getting stressed out about Kyrie leaving and making a bunch of short-term moves.
Yes.
To make sure, like say if they think find Deng, who is 28, but the oldest 28 in the world because of all the minutes he played under Thibodeau.
Right.
And so, you know, trying to make sort of desperation moves to keep Kyrie. And remember, he's not even hitting unrestricted free agency after next season. He has restricted free agency after next season.
Right.
So you always want to see them making long-term prudent moves. But at the same time, the issue is when they make these moves and they, you know, the plan works. They get the draft picks. They get the number one, the number four, the number four again, then the number one pick. You turn that into Kyrie Irving, Tristan Thompson, Deion Waiters, and Anthony Bennett.
I mean, God.
That's one very good player.
Yeah.
One good sixth man, a bench power forward, and a horrible, horrible basketball player.
I mean, God, if they can get a top four pick in this draft, they should be fine, right? They're not going to go, like, take Gary Harris with the fourth pick, are they?
I don't know. Well, the thing about this draft is they're cheap. Let's see what you got. They're not going to take Exum or Smart, obviously.
Right. I mean, they could take...
And so if they end up outside of the top four, which I think is possible,
yeah,
you've got, like, Aaron Gordon.
Which is not
good.
Bad, yeah.
No, I think he's better than Tristan Thompson.
Right.
But, I mean, there's a lot of... it would be nice if they could win that. Can I play... Let me do the lottery mock draft. Where are they right now? It's very hardcore analysis. Okay, right now, Chad Ford hasn't taken Dante Exum because Chad Ford is in love with Dante Exum.
Yeah.
I just played it, and they got him with the number five pick.
You could put him at the shooting guard position, I think. I mean, we don't know if
I
he can
he
shoot.
Can.
But that would...
We don't know anything about him. I think Chad Ford's being catfished by Dante Exum. I'm not sure if he's real.
I think everybody is because everyone is so high on him, and I'm just like, where is the game footage against good competition? Like, oh, well, he did good at the under-19s. I'm like, that's four games. Like, we can't base that off four games. Like,
nobody's seen him play.
Nobody's seen him play. He's like Banksy. Like, he's the Banksy of basketball.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I'm sure, yeah. And no, it's great. Nothing will beat when the Cavs drafted, the kid. And they didn't know who he was. So they didn't have a name for him. They didn't have a draft name for him. He got traded to the Lakers. Why am I blanking? This is really embarrassing.
He traded to the Lakers?
Yeah, he got picked up by them eventually.
Christian Ayanga.
Ayanga, yeah.
Yeah.
It was like he averaged 2.9 points last season for the B team in Spain. It was like, what? They're like, here's some game footage. And it was like, he's like playing like literally like an empty gym. Like, it would be sparsely attended, like, high school game.
Right.
Like, only the parents are in the stands. Everyone's like, has he played basketball against humans before?
Jesus, like, that was only 4.5 years ago.
Oh, I know.
Oh, my God.
He was never, like, a professional basketball player of note. Like, and then he just became one. It was very bad.
So, if you're... Let's say you get to run the Cavs. You're the new owner. You have Dan Gilbert's money. You've had a hostile takeover of the whole Quicken industry. What are your first like three steps for fixing this team?
I think you gotta stay patient. You keep your ear to the ground on Tristan, and see what you can do with that. I think you do what you can do with the big salaries and Tristan, see if you can do anything with that, although I doubt it. I think you are just going into the lottery this season, and you have to make the best of it. The problem is there just aren't a lot of assets.
Yeah.
Well,
isn't the best thing for them at this point to tank? And I mean, I know the culture sucks, and you need to change the culture, but yeah. They're not doing that in the last 35 games, right?
No. So I wouldn't go full tank. They've tried that before. I mean, I think they're doing a fine job of tanking on their own.
right.
But I think what you look for is you start to have a philosophy, and the first thing you need is someone in the front court who can shoot the basketball. That's what I thought they were getting out of Bennett, I think. You have to change that, and you have to make sure that you have guys who can get a really, you have to make sure you can put a good defensive team on the floor. I need defense and I need shooting, which are obviously tough to find in the same player a lot of times.
Right.
But that's what I start to do. I go into this draft, I get the best guy available, unless it's a point guard. And then, you know, I go about trying to craft my team. In the model of a sort of Bulls-esque team with a bit more shooting than they had, the Rose Bulls. Just very aggressive and long defensively, and then you don't have to be an offensive juggernaut, just some guys who can space the floor for Irving, particularly in the front court. And of course, every year you look into moving Varejao. I think it's been a bit of a bummer for them in that he was the second best player from the LeBron era.
Yeah.
And he's had major injuries in each of the three seasons, which kept them from A, being as good as they could have been, although even with Varejao, they were never that good, or B, trading him for a very high value piece. I mean, back when the Thunder were looking for serious front court help.
Right.
You know, maybe they could have gotten Harden for him or something. You know, obviously I have no idea if that's something that could have happened. But he was a big fish they could have dangled at the deadline. Before each deadline, he suffered major injuries.
Yeah.
So that was tough. You have to decide. So I think maybe move a package of Varejao and Waiters. Varejao's salary and Waiters' salary if you can get somebody else good. But the problem is teams are smart now. They're not going to give you, well, we'll trade a young guy and a guy with a big salary for a guy who's really good.
Right.
You're not going to get a guy who's really good. This is an odd example because now it looks like he's like sound religion or something, but Rudy Gay. You're going to find someone with like a big name. And then, hooray, we have Rudy Gay now. I mean, best case scenario, you can't get Carmelo Anthony and the Knicks are out of the playoffs.
Right.
Now, even if you can manage to get Carmelo Anthony, which you can't with the assets you have, you still might not make the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's all bad. So, I don't know.
Would you rather be in the Knicks situation or the Cavs situation?
The Cavs situation because they have draft picks.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's the easy answer there. And they have a restricted free agency with Kyrie.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess what is the, because you end up kind of keeping your own with the restricted free agency. Then clearly I don't think Kyrie's taking the qualifying offer. So, so you're gonna get him back because you're gonna match whatever. So you at least have him for, unless he asks for an extension of 4 years
Gilbert
with the opt out.
Definitely wants to sign him to a max extension this summer.
Yeah. And I think, like, worst case scenario, you get him for 4 years with an opt-out after three, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. And so you have him, but then what do you do with Tristan Thompson in restricted free agency?
I would probably let him walk. That's a good thing about restricted free agency. You see, if you can keep him for three or four or maybe even five, he's a nice power forward off the bench.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's the Tristan Thompson challenge. Play with your friends. does this team starting? Would if you had a game tomorrow, would you rather have Tristan Thompson starting at power forward instead of this current starting power forward in the NBA?
Well, this may be an extreme example, and I may regret it, but like I'm looking at what Andre Blatch has done for the Nets. I think I would much rather have Andre Blatch than Tristan Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Tristan Thompson has not been a defensive juggernaut.
Yeah, at least this season.
He's been here for 3 years, and they've been a bad defensive team 3 years running.
Right.
And Blatch can score it for you and stretch the floor a little bit.
And
he's not LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah, and it's not like, these aren't lockdown defenders, but putting him with Varejao when Varejao is healthy and putting him with Alonzo G last. I mean, Lonzo G's a decent defender. He's a pretty. I mean, I think he's an average defender.
He's a decent defender.
Yeah, but I mean, like even with those combinations, they were atrocious. And you can't pin that all on Tristan Thompson, but it was.
You can't pin it all on Tristan, but again, you're not contributing that much value offensively.
Right.
And we'd hope that you'd be a big plus defensively, and we'd hope that that would show up in just not being a terrible defensive team.
This is depressing. Give me some kind of. What's the hope?
Welcome to my world.
Where's the hope? Is it just that Kyrie regains the magic? I mean, he definitely is better in the last like month or so, I would say.
Yeah, the magic of when they were, even when he was in his bed, they were terrible.
Yeah.
I think he just hopes that they can hit a home run on this next draft, and maybe Anthony Bennett can turn it around. Maybe he sends this offseason in like a dark gym somewhere, just like running and lifting. Maybe he just writes this off as just like a lost season for Anthony Bennett, in which he never had a chance.
Yeah, I mean, he did have the shoulder injuries.
Yeah, he had a shoulder injury, which somehow made him allergic to, stationary bikes. I don't know.
That's a lot of bouncing.
It's very bad. He's not a stretch four. He's a three with stretch marks.
Come on.
That's
so mean.
It's just, hopefully you can write this off as like, just pretend Anthony Bennett had an ACL or something like that.
Yeah.
And he starts with Tabula Rasa next season. And there's a reason he was a number one pick. He was very athletic and a good big body and had 3-point range and all those things. And maybe he can show you some of that. Look at the sun. Things can turn around. Just sometimes you just catch lightning in the bottle and it just happens. And it can happen. Kyrie's a good enough player to get a team into the playoffs, into the East.
Right.
I mean, that should happen. So you just hope that they can find that lightning in a bottle that's eluded them since LeBron left. That's basically the Cavs.
Jesus. I may throw, like, in the editing process, I may just throw, like, some background Morrissey music or something just to liven things up a bit. This is really depressing. Can we talk about LeBron?
He's having a great season. He looked amazing in the post.
Where do you stand on the whole LeBron-Kevin Durant MVP thing?
I think Kevin Durant's the MVP right now. I don't really see how there's a card. My whole thing is you go, there's three big, if you're going head-to-head with two guys for MVP, you go size of the role on the team, how efficient they are in performing that role, and the team's record, how good is the team.
Right.
And I think Durant has had a bigger role, although Wade's been here and there. He's been great lately, but he's been here and there. Westbrook has basically been out all year, even when he was playing, he wasn't really himself. Reggie Jackson's great and all that, and Serge Ibaka's looking nice. Well, Serge Ibaka shoots it every time he touches it from mid-range.
Yeah, it's like they made him the safety valve, and then as roles have changed with injuries, he's just like, no, I'm still going to be a safety valve and just shoot it all the time.
Every time. It'll be like 17 seconds left, and like he can have like an open lane of the basket. It's like, nope, I've got a 17-footer guy. It's like, no, you don't make like 60% of those. You make like 40-some-odd% of those.
Right.
And you have Kevin Durant on your team who you can pass the ball back to if need be. But still, it's a great offensive team, and he was good. But he's not better than Bosh. And so I think that Kevin Durant's been playing with less of an incredible supporting cast than LeBron. And he's obviously just scoring-wise, he's doing things we haven't seen before.
Right.
It's unreal.
Do you think LeBron can take it back from him this season? What would he have to do? Do they have to finish with the one seed?
If the Thunder finished with a better record, I think it would be very, very difficult.
Yeah.
I think they'd have to finish with a better record. They'd have to go on one of those huge runs. Which it looks like they could be starting now because they've won their last two. Wade looks back, but But, I mean, remember last time some people were starting to lean towards Durant at midseason because it looked like it was going to be one of these, like, epic duels. Then the Heat won 27 games in a row.
Right.
And the debate kind of ended.
Right.
Because that will happen. So Durant has just sort of had... So I think the case slash hope for LeBron James' MVP is this last push, this last crazy push that Durant's been on was... You remember when they started the 27-game winning streak and LeBron had, like, what was it, four straight games of shooting 60% in a row?
Yeah, he ended up set a very odd NBA record of, like, six straight games with 30 points in a game or more and 60% shooting or higher.
Yeah, and then he only broke that streak when he beat the Thunder.
Right.
And he, like, had the 60%, but then he took, like, a 28-footer.
Right.
When the game was pretty much already over. I mean, it was crazy. So you hope that this last incredible push that Oklahoma City's been on, you know, 9-1, we know that the 30-point streak on 50% shooting, this has been their push, and now Miami's going to make their push. But right now, and I think the thing that nobody says yet, because reputations are they are in the NBA, is that Durant is playing better defense than LeBron this year.
Oh, interesting.
And if you look at it, and it's always hard because, I mean, LeBron's blocks are down, and he has lost a quarter step. I think the Heat as a whole, they're dialing it back a little bit. And
yeah.
LeBron came into the season in not his best shape, which he's acknowledged because he did take time off during the offseason, which he normally never does. And they're obviously maintaining themselves. But if you look at the numbers, I mean, normally, just when you look at the numbers, LeBron sort of pops out as, like, one of the best defensive players. But the 82 games, they're 7.5 points worse defensively for 100 possessions when LeBron's on the floor. He's not covering that insane amount of space that he does because he's conserving some energy.
Yeah, he is more sedentary, I would say. And not necessarily in a bad way, just not like this elite defender way.
And I would expect in the playoffs, or maybe even later in the regular season, for him to ratchet that back up.
Yeah.
And become one of the two or three best defensive players in the NBA, which he is when he's on. But this season, I mean, just defensively, the on-offs are better for Durant. His man-to-man defense looks great. And Oklahoma City is a better defensive team. So you have to, and they're a great defensive team. I mean, they're number three in defensive efficiency, Oklahoma City. Miami's down at 15.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very hard argument to make that LeBron's having a better defensive season than Durant. I think Durant's having a significantly better offensive season. But it's like back when the LeBron-Kobe MVP debates were happening earlier, and Kobe had been an all-defense guy for like a million years, and LeBron was not really considered a great defender yet. It takes a while to change your reputation, either for good or for bad, defensively in the NBA.
Right.
For whatever reasons. We just sort of, oh yeah, he's a very good defender. And we just sort of say that ad nauseum until it becomes glaringly obvious that you are getting blown by all the time now.
Right.
So yeah. I mean, you know, it's like a Marcus Camby thing. It was like, so are we just going to talk about the fact that he doesn't get out on pick and rolls anymore, ever?
Well, that was the thing about, I think, Ben Wallace's last two Defensive Player of the Year awards. I was just like, really? This guy? Because he's really not that good on defense anymore. I mean, at least not in a Defensive Player of the Year sense.
Yeah. Actually, he was great on defense before he broke his leg the year he was with the Cavs. He was, like, flying out on those pick and rolls and, like, doing all... That was such a great team. That team I missed, that 08-09 team. That was a really fun. The Shaq team was not nearly as much fun.
Yeah.
Still a great team. Still more fun than this team. But the 08-09 team, I love that. That's my favorite.
Do the Cavs need more sideline dancing? Because things really went well when they were sideline dancing.
They had like it was like a Busby Berkeley show. They were really getting into it. They were like going really full out with
it. Timely reference. 08-09.
They had like a full production happening. And it was fun. I think Kevin Durant has a pretty firm hold on the MVP right now. Even if you didn't want to get into things, you know, that LeBron's won four, Kevin Durant hasn't won any, et cetera, et cetera. And I do think voter fatigue plays some role, but not as much one. I think it's really hard to wrestle it away from best player, best team.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a Tim Duncan where he just doesn't score a lot or doesn't take a huge percentage of his team's points. Or Paul George, where you can just clearly say Kevin Durant does much more for his team, especially on offense, than Paul George. It's really hard to get it away from the best player on the best team.
Yeah.
And, it's, you know, there needs to be an overwhelming thing, and there aren't, because his Kevin Durant statistics are also just unreal. It's unreal what we're seeing. You know, it's just like when you talk about guys being unguardable, this is what unguardable looks like. I mean, even with LeBron's pushing out to the perimeter and pray he misses, even when he got good with really good with that jump shot. You know, there's still nights where he doesn't really feel like doing, where he just doesn't really have it dialed, and he doesn't really like shoot the jump shot. It's still stoppable. With Durant, when he's on, you're completely at his mercy, and he combines that feeling, which we've seen with great scorers like Kobe and Jordan and all that, but he does it more consistently than Kobe. He combines sort of this night in, night out efficiency that LeBron has with just this feeling that there's nothing you can do if his shot is falling that Kobe has, and it's unbelievable. It's just, he's an unreal scorer. I think he's the best scorer that I will see in my lifetime.
Yeah, even, I mean, LeBron James, I still think is the better player.
Yes, I do think he is the better player.
But
we're talking about best player.
Yeah, but even comparing Durant this year to LeBron last year, there is this odd sense. I mean, maybe it's just the gaudy scoring numbers, but there is this feeling I get of, it feels like Durant's play this year is more impactful than what LeBron did last year, and maybe that's just recency bias. Maybe that's just, oh, it's a cool new thing, that a cool shiny object that's dangling in front of me that's distracting me. But because I know how unreal LeBron was last year, but there is a slight hint where I'm like, maybe this is more impactful in a way, because there's seemingly less help.
There is, yeah, I think there is seemingly less help. I think that's a valid point, and I think the bad thing, the thing that you don't even want to mention is that this will become an issue in the playoffs. They still do have a very long road in those Western playoffs.
Yeah.
So you're, part of you, you know, as someone who went through this in Cleveland with LeBron, part of you almost rooted for Kevin Durant, because he can be this good, like he is, and he can be this incredible. He's got a long road to a ring this year, man. I mean, a long road. Westbrook's got to come back. He's got to get back into the flow of everything. He's got to do it. And then they're going to have to be, you know, what? Yeah, it's, I can do basic math. they're going to have to win, you know, some tough series to get out of the West. Then they're going to have to face, you know, in all probability, the Pacers or the Heat.
Right.
And the second Oklahoma City loses four games before they win them in the series, it's, oh, Kevin Durant, well, there goes the hype.
Right.
There goes the hype train. But there's nothing hype about that. We're not hyping this. We're saying that he is scoring 30 points every game,
yeah,
making more shots than he is missing, and this is ridiculous.
Yeah, you can't hype 31 on 50, yeah. 40, 88. Like, there's no hyping that.
It's like, and with his second best player on his team missing, and they're on top of the Western Conference.
Right.
And yeah, and the current second best player was a guy who didn't play basketball until he was, like 18 years old or right. something ridiculous like that.
Right, exactly.
I mean, this isn't hype. It's happening now. They still might lose in the playoffs because the playoffs are really tough. And
especially in the West. Yeah.
Rough series.
Right.
Because it can happen, but like,
because even like, look, the
right now that is happening, you just have to step back and, oh my God, I think I've heard Steve Nixon say that verbatim. it's not hype. Even if it doesn't come with a ring, this is incredible. This is something right. we haven't seen. You know, I know everyone saw Jordan, and it can't be real if Michael Jordan didn't do it. But this is absolutely as good as NBA basketball gets, this is as well as a basketball. This is as well as a human being can score a basketball. And in some ways, he reminds me of Kareem a little bit, even though his per-game scoring numbers are so good.
Is it because they're the same height? Because I'm pretty sure Durant is like 7'3 at this point.
Yeah. Because they almost make it look a little too easy.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Durant doesn't have the signature move, but sort of like cross up and wins, and you could like, well, Kobe had more moves. Like, who cares? He had more moves. Durant has a quick crossover, and he can rise up, and then the ball is 7 feet above the ground.
Right.
More than, and he shoots it and makes it all the time.
Right.
Like, how many counters do you need at some point?
Well, and also, like, I think it's great if you have more moves, but if you have one move that allows you to shoot the ball over 50% while scoring 30 a game, I'll just take the one move. Like, that's good.
I'll take that one move. Yeah, I don't care if he's putting it into his nose.
Yeah, that's good enough for me. I don't need I don't need a variety show. Just give me the stand-up comedy.
Chris Kaman has more moves than Shaq. I think Shaq was better.
Right.
I mean, yeah, no, it's one of those really weird things where you're getting the aesthetics versus the effectiveness of basketball. It's sort of one of these really odd arguments that I think as more and more data has come in, it's becoming a thing. It's interesting. And then, you know, but do these, that's a whole other podcast, and I've been on for a while.
Before we go, can we just discuss Starship Troopers 3 for like 4 minutes?
Oh my god! I told you. I told you about it.
You did. You were the one that keyed me in. I had never seen it before until I think last year. And you were like, "This is the greatest like religious allegory ever." And
because I mean, the first Starship Troopers, we all know about the first Starship Troopers,
right?
Friends are remaking it. We absolutely protest this.
I had an idea. I had an idea that makes me happy about a remake. If they just, I said this on the podcast yesterday, if they just take the Varsity Blues cast and characters and put them into the Starship Troopers original movie.
Apparently it's going to be like faithful to the book. And the book is apparently just like filled with like lectures about how communists are awful and they should all be killed.
Oh my god.
It's like a pro-fascist book. Like, that's the whole thing of the first Starship Troopers. Like you watch it and you don't really realize, and you watch it as a kid, they're like, it's just Paul Verhoeven just making so much fun of this book.
Right.
It's so ridiculous and over the top. Like the guy who wrote the book, like, honestly believes these things, like, the military. He's like, you shouldn't be a citizen unless you're in the military and you kill things. And especially communists. Communists are just giant bugs. Like, that was what he believed. And so the second Starship Troopers, don't watch that.
It's really bad.
They just got, like, the licensing rights to Starship Troopers.
Yeah, it's
and, like,
nothing.
Mentioned some bugs, and it's just, like, a slasher film.
Right.
And, like, nobody involved with the first Starship Troopers movie is in this one.
No.
Now, the third movie, they have no money to make this movie.
I honestly think they had about $4,000.
They might have had, like, $4,000. But they got the writer from the first one back.
Yeah.
But not Paul Verhoeven. They have the writer directed. And they get the one cast member they get back is Casper Van Dien, because, you know, other people got, like, famous or something like that. By the way, if you go back and watch the first Starship Troopers, you've got, like, Hank Schrader from Breaking Bad.
Right, yeah.
Got, like, Carver from The Wire.
You've got Jake Busey. You've got Rube from Major League 2.
Yeah, exactly. Rube, yeah, he's the guy who gets his head shot off. Yeah.
Right.
That's just a fun... That will not happen with Starship Troopers 3, because not only is Casper Van Dien the only actor they could get back, Casper Van Dien looks like Laurence Olivier, like, in this movie. Like, nobody else is close to acting on the same level as Casper Van Dien.
No.
Like, there's some major cast players who have a tenuous grasp of English. Like, I'm not exaggerating that.
I was just thinking, there are three celebrities that follow me on Twitter. And
Casper Van Dien followed me too. And I was very happy to.
Yeah, like it's Casper Van Dien, Tara Reid just recently followed me, and Michael Jai White. And to me, that's like, oh my god, that's my youth right there. Those three people. And I just thought about it, I'm like, oh, that doesn't say anything well about them. That's really bad for them.
Yeah, no. And so anyways, And it's like, yeah, like some of the actors and stuff, like, oh, is that person doing an accent? Like, no, that's not an accent. That is just, English is this person's second language, and they are not doing great at it.
It's more confusion than an accent.
And so, but the guy just, it's what would happen if you locked a guy in a room and were for like 5 years, and we're like, you have $4,000, do not come out until you have made the greatest movie of all time. Because this guy with no budget, like, he could have just, like, cashed in, made, like, a quick, like, Starship Troopers thing that everyone wanted to see. No. This dude decided to go for it.
No, he went all out.
Like, this, you have, like, the general, like, the main general of the army releasing, like, hit records as, like, a satire for this. You have, like, people, like, openly expressing their views on God. Like, he wanted this movie to be about, like, political corruption, celebrity culture, the importance of faith in the world. Like, this dude just went for it. Like, decided to make, like, the craziest, best movie ever.
It's kind of amazing, like, that it's not Hunter S. Thompson. Because that's what it feels like.
Because the pure ambition of it is what's incredible. Like, right. There's no... And this is what makes this separates, like, bad movies that are just kind of bad from bad movies that are amazing. It's not a bad movie that is pandering to you. Like, it is going for it. It is just sort of half reveling in its own badness and half just like, we are going all out. Like, we will make this a different experience than a movie that you could... This will not be a worse version of a movie that you could get made by people with real money.
Right.
This is a movie that is just too crazy for anyone to actually throw money into. Like, we can't get what they're making? Fine. We don't want their money. We're too crazy for their money.
He was the writer of the RoboCop TV series that lasted about a day. Also, he was the writer. He did the screenplay for Anaconda's The Hunt for the Blood Orchid.
So I saw that in theaters.
Oh my god.
I don't recommend it very highly. They got none of the cast of the original Anaconda back.
No, top billing.
What I did just do was I actually just saw The Room in theaters with Tommy Wiseau there doing the Q&A.
Oh, how was that?
It's amazing. If you have, like, The Room veterans and, like, you're throwing the spoons.
Yeah.
And, like, they're, it's incredible.
That is something, if you could go find an independent theater and you haven't done so in your neck of the woods. There's the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I think the original
is
one is in Westwood. That's where I saw it.
Okay. The Rocky Horror Picture Show thing is like, what, 30, 40 years old of doing that kind of thing? But like, The Room is like the new one, and that's definitely something, an experience to have. Like, just go in, don't try to participate, just observe everybody, go in, and then and then go see it again in that environment.
You'll get it as you go along.
Yeah, it's not that complicated.
Bring spoons, the important thing.
Right, bring spoons. No, but I honestly can't. I would have watched it eventually, but I wouldn't have watched it with the excitement and the fervor that I got out of Starship Troopers 3 without you just selling me at like 1 a.m. on a Tuesday night on GChat, just saying, you have to watch this movie.
This is happening. This is happening right now.
It is. I mean, that is one of the jauntiest efforts.
Or just like me just doing, Zach, this exists. Zach, this exists.
It really is one of the most Herculean efforts by a writer with zero budget ever.
Zero, he just decided to go all out. And then, like, the whole thing is, like, they're talking about, like, the jumpsuits are, like, the main thing of the movie. And for this, there are two things you know about the jumpsuit scene. First of all, like, the entire movie is based on these Marauder suits.
Right.
The subtitle movie was Starship 3 Marauder. They did not have the money for the Marauder.
No, not
the
at all.
The Marauders appear... This is basically... I'll sum up the movie in, like, a nutshell. The Marauders appear for maybe 30 seconds in, like, a wide shot, because they clearly do not have the money for that. And when they are dropping down, because these are space chutes that you drop down on, a character is praying in front of a giant brain bug, because she's decided to combat the giant brain bug with prayer. And the jumpsuits come in such a way so that they form what looks like a halo around her head. And then when they are getting into the jumpsuits, they're all naked from head hair to toe for no reason whatsoever.
Right.
Like, the prep for the jumpsuits requires them to be completely naked. That is the jumpsuit scene, and that there's that and so much more in the full version of Starship Trooper 3 Marauder.
I have an appreciation for bad movies in the sense that somebody was asking me about this last night at the Wolves game. They're like, why do you watch such crappy movies? I was like, I like good movies. I just appreciate bad movies. I appreciate the process of, oh my God, that was the best idea they had for the scene, or that was the best take, or this was the dialogue that was agreed upon. Like, that decision process is fascinating to me, and I appreciate that. But there are bad, like you said, there are bad movies that are just bad movies, and there are bad movies that are just amazing viewing experiences, and that's what this is.
It really is. We just talked about this movie for like 15 minutes.
I may just cut all of the previous talk and just loop this for 45 minutes.
We need to bring it back from the cast being depressed. Maybe that's bad, Starship Trooper 3 good.
Yeah, I should put just a little message at the start of the episode, just like, hey, look, the first 30 minutes are really depressing if you're a Cavs fan, but if you like Starship Troopers 3 Marauder, you've got to keep listening. All right, John Krolik, we can follow you on Twitter at John Krolik, and yep. And Cavs the blog, you're still the founding editor.
Yep, still very hard to unbecome the founding editor.
It's really difficult. It's a whole petition process that no one really wants to go through. Thank you so much.
Thank you.